Welcome, everyone. So we're about ready to open this up for people, but I would like to know if any of you have any questions about the weekend, anything that you feel is, you know, pertinent to the rest of the group that you might like them to know. I see people waving, and I think they have a question, but they don't. Also, there's one thing I did forget to tell you. We were contacted a couple of weeks ago by some documentary filmmakers about a new project that they have, and they are with us here tonight to meet ex-Mormons and to talk to as many of you. I think you said there's no filming, right? You're not doing any filming. They just want to get to know this part of Mormonism, and a little bit later, I think maybe tomorrow we'll, in fact, if you want to come up and tell about the project, I might have you repeat it tomorrow when more people are here. So if one of you want to come up, go ahead and tell us about it.
Yay! All right, everybody, while she is up and showing us some entertainment, my name's Jonathan Levi Powell, and I have a lot of energy, generally speaking. So if everybody could stand up and introduce yourself to somebody you've never met before, please. Just get a quick hello, how are you? And remember that we all... There you go. Perfect. Okay. All right, thank you. Have a seat if you don't mind. Oh, this is awesome. There they go.
They were eager to do it, obviously.
All right, if you don't mind, just to stay on schedule for everybody else, now have a seat. And I love good energy, so thank you. I do what I can. All right, so one more time, my name is Jonathan Levi Powell. I was born and raised in the Seattle, Washington area, and I am 35 years old. This is probably as weird for me as it is for many of you. I have not been in a room of this many people that were at one point members or are still members of the church. As we were introduced, we are making a documentary. My friend Brandon Diet, who could please stand up, and myself. This film is going to be quite provocative in some fashion, so I'll just take a brief second to tell you about it. I was raised LDS, and my mother joined the church when I was 5 years old as a single mother of three women, and shortly after, about a year after, married her home teacher and had two more kids. So I come from... actually an interracial Mormon and gay family. And that brings up the topic of our film. I went on a mission to West Virginia, but I'm gonna rewind just a bit. When I was about 16 years old, I was caught talking to a friend about a relatively lightweight physical experience that I had with another man. And my mother caught me. Like any mother that was unsure of what to do, she took me to the bishop with my stepfather, and we sat in a room alone where they all stared at me and educated me that this was a temptation and a sin that I would be able to overcome, and that I was only tempted by being homosexual because I was strong enough to overcome that sin. Fast forward shortly after that, I became what I called Super Mormon. I actually had a shirt made that said Stormin' Mormon on it because I wanted to prove to everybody in the world how worthy I was of being on this planet. It was a tumultuous time, but in that period of time, I did everything that I could to prove my Mormonism to everybody in the world, including baptizing one of my best friends when I was only 16 years old. Performing the act of baptism at that point. Fast forwarding to my graduation from high school. I was 17, no, I was 18 and a senior in high school when I got my mission call in class. My mom came to school with the papers after I had filled out all of the documents required. The reason that I was so eager to get my mission call was because, again, I was trying to prove how Mormon I was. 2 months after graduating high school, I left to West Virginia, the poorest county in our country at the time, and served my mission. I had always been aware of my sexuality, and I had never really fought against that I was gay, but I didn't want to act out on it. So my bishop knew. When I went to the MTC, I was accused of being gay by some of the missionaries in training there and had to be pulled into the president of the MTC's office and tell him about my temptations, and then tell him that I was working very hard to be as much of a quality member of the church as I could. They chose not to send me home at that time and said, you can continue to serve your mission. I love you for being emotional. It's really weird for me to be sharing this story. I went to West Virginia. I served, and about 5.5, 6 months into my mission, I met a young man that I couldn't help but feel attached to. He was also a member of the church and a member of an inactive family. So our job as missionaries was to go to their house regularly and try to encourage them to come to church. And at one point during the day, he said to me that we have a lot more in common than I think you know. And I was like, what do you mean? Besides that you love Seattle? Because I am from Seattle. And he was like, you're cute. I was like, oh, God, okay. In West Virginia, of all places, I didn't think there would be gay people there, especially members of the church. Needless to say, I was madly in love with this kid for a very brief period of time. Sound check. Awesome. Anyway, so, you know, I remember specifically, actually, it was Halloween, and I kissed him. And I was wearing my missionary uniform, and I couldn't help but tell him how much I cared about him. He was a young man still living with his family at that point, so where he was able to turn, I was unsure. I decided to tell my companion via a song that was not allowed to be listened to on my mission. And it was a Savage Garden song that at one point said, I don't believe you can choose your sexuality. There were many other lyrics in the song, but my companion immediately said, you're gay. And I was like, yeah, I am. And he said, I know, and I'm not concerned about that, but I think you need to tell the president of our mission. And so I chose to tell the president of my mission that I was gay. And moving forward, he had offered reparative therapy as an option and chose to give me 2 more weeks in the area that I was currently in. And at transfers, I would go to an area of the mission that I could receive counseling. It didn't quite work out that way. I went to transfers, and everyone's name in the room, like we are currently, was called, except for mine. And at the end of that meeting, me, with no companion, had a couple of men walk up to me. I was sitting probably right where you are right now, and asked me to come with them. I went back to find my missionary president, and he said that the mother of the man I fell in love with had found a note that I wrote to him and called the president of the mission and encouraged to send me home, which is what happened. At this moment, I'm going to read just a brief paragraph from my missionary journal in 2000 as I was leaving West Virginia. It just states that yesterday was... this is December 1st, 2000. Yesterday was transfers. I haven't read this other than this afternoon in a long time. And yesterday was transfers. I was told that I would be going to Bluefield with Elder Wonder. That didn't happen. I was saddened by the news, but I realized it was the best thing for me. If I truly want to change, I feel sorrow for what I have done, but do not want to be depressed again. I contemplated suicide last night. So I merely focused on this as being an opportunity to prevail against my enemy, Satan. I then went home, where my family had moved across the country. So the point of this film that we're creating, which is called Latter-day Glory, is not just my story, but the story of one other man who went on a mission and came out 10 years after his mission. We will also be interviewing anybody and everybody that grew up LDS and is part of the LGBT community. And as we tell our story, those interviews will be interweaved into the film. This is inevitably the most important and valuable part of the movie because we want everybody to know that they're not alone and that the young men and women today have somebody to turn to. I encourage any of you to contact myself or my friend Brandon Diet at the Latter Day Glory or LatterdayGloryTheMovie.com or LatterdayGloryTheMovie@gmail.com. You can also check out our Facebook page at Latter Day Glory The Movie Facebook. You can look me up on Facebook. You can come talk to me all weekend. And lastly, and definitely not least, do not leave this room and do not leave another minute of your life without realizing that you have so much worth on this planet. I forgot that when I was younger, and it's taken a long time to gain that knowledge. But I have it now, and I'm very grateful for it. So I can't wait to hear everybody else speak, and thank you for letting me take a few minutes of your time. Have a great evening.
Did you guys bring cards or anything? Okay.
Yes, we have a stack.
You can put them over there on the table. I thought probably you did.
I almost put my key card in there, too.
I'm sure that was an accident. Okay. The rest of the time during this session will be turned over to those of you who would like to come up. For those of you who haven't been here before, the protocol is that we give you 5 minutes. We don't let it drone on like in some of our sacrament meetings that we remember. And I'm going to have little cheat sheets here, and I will hold them up. When you have 3 minutes left, you'll see that, then 2 minutes, then one, and the last one is you're done. So if anyone, we are live streaming this audio, correct? Just audio. Just audio, right? Right? Anyway.
No,
this is video. Oh. But I don't think we're live streaming that video. Oh, okay, I guess they are. Wish I'd known. I have some children who don't, you know, approve of what I do. What? That's what I... Right. Yeah. If you want to come up but don't want your what you have to say to be on the film, then just motion to the filmmakers and let them know that. And so the time is now yours, depending on how many people come up. We will then dismiss to go to the hospitality room and just have a really good time for the rest of the evening. So if you want to say anything, why don't you come up and sit on the front row, and that way we can kind of move it along a little more. And if you won't get your crutches out of the way, you're going to be dead meat. I'm just tough. All right. Time is yours.
Hi,
All right. It's been years since I've done this, but my name is Ernest Horstmanshoff, and I am an ex-Mormon. Now, it's interesting, but I think I've been actually waiting a year to publicly declare this. See, 1 year ago, we attended our first Exmo conference, and I was so riveted by this session to hear from people. I was so surprised. And so, you see, because I know there's a five-minute limit, I prepared some notes. Now, before it started, when I first arrived here last year, I admit I was hesitant. And I think that's, you know, X seemed to me, for some reason, to have a strident, rebellious connotation. And in fact, John DeLynn spoke at this very session, and he apologized to the ex-Mormon community and organization. That only increased my respect and admiration for John, because I think he recognized and acknowledged that also being uninformed, as I was, about what the ex-Mormons was about, he'd been dismissive of them. And it was really great to see him embrace and celebrate this organization that I think is a place of welcome, a refuge for what I think is the ever-growing population of transitioning and transitioned Mormons. And though my spouse and I dyed in the wool Mormons, we went on missions, I had a temple marriage, he did a PhD at BYU, I was there at law school, and although we've been secular for over a decade, it was only a year ago when his well-meaning sister-in-law, wife to his bishop brother, asked me, "Ernie, you don't even believe, so why do you even care?" You know, sort of like, you can leave the church, but you can't leave it again. Well, anyway, I thought about that, and so I thought I'd share with you why I do care. And though the answer are many, I'd like to point to three areas which I surprisingly find exemplified in this past year by the comments of three Mormon apostles. The first, just this September, David Bednar, incredulously, just like the former president of Iran declared to the world, there are no homosexuals in Iran, Mr. Bednar boldly and arrogantly claimed there are no homosexuals in the church. Why do I care? It is this demonic rhetoric combined with the medieval exclusion policy declaring married gays apostates and their children unacceptable to the church unless they reach adulthood and disavow their parents' marriage. This homophobia is devastating. No, Mr. Bednar. As a presidential candidate just recently said, words matter and your lies matter. Suicide is now the leading cause of death for Utah's youth aged 10 to 17, and less than a month ago, not far from this city, a 19-year-old took his life. He's not the first, and I fear not the last. I'm astounded and appalled that in 2016, the Mormon Church is a more hostile and esteem-destroying place for LGBT youth than it has ever been. Lives and families are being destroyed by the church's homophobia. Robert Kirby characterized it as the church's modern Meadows massacre, and this is so wrong. So my heart goes out to these families. I'm just grateful and want to acknowledge and acclaim the tireless efforts of the Mama Dragons. I am a strong advocate of theirs. I realize my time is running short, so I'm going to run this a little bit faster. But the second is Jeff Holland displayed his fury and was so denigrating to those of us who leave the church. He challenged our convictions, describes our ordeal as patty cake, taffy pulling experience. He rants, accusing us of wanting answers to every question before we commit. Well, Mr. Holland, how about just answering one question among the many? Book of Abraham, peepstones, pressuring and manipulating a 14-year-old into a marriage lest she be responsible for the founding prophet's death by an angel's sword. Polygamy, polyandry, the list is much longer, but my time is out. No, Mr. Holland, look about you. How dare you label and describe us as lazy, defiant, acting as if nothing mattered to us. We're talking about the Jeremy Reynolds, Hans Mattsons, Tyler Gland, John Dillon, probably everyone in this room. Look about you. I think we are an incredibly beautiful people that you divine, that you malign, Mr. Holland. Finally, let me close, because I'm supposed to be done. Just last Sunday, where will you go? Russell Ballard. I've been amazed at the wonderful, inspiring responses on Facebook. But in closing, I'd like to share with you my answer, an excerpt from my favorite of books I read to my grandchildren by none other than the brilliant Dr. Seuss. Where will we go? Oh, the places you will go. You'll be on your way up. You'll be seeing great sights. You'll join the high flyers who soar to high heights. You won't lag behind because you'll have the speed. You'll pass the whole gang and you'll soon take the lead. Wherever you fly, you'll be the best of the best. Wherever you go, you will top the rest. You'll get mixed up, of course, as you already know. You'll get mixed up with many strange birds as you go. So be sure, when you step, step with care and great tact. And remember that life's a great balancing act. Just never forget to be dexterous and deft, and never mix up your right foot with your left. And will you succeed? Yes, you will indeed. 98.75% guaranteed. Kids, you'll move mountains. We'll move mountains. I'm Ernie Horstmetzoff, and I am an ex-Mormon. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Nathan Kennard, and as said before, I am an ex-Mormon. And I just can't wait to hear all the other people who are will soon come to share their experience. So that's all. Thank you.
No film, please. This is far too pretty to document. I have so many names. My temple name is Sam. That's a fun one. If you come and see me today, I'm going by Raptor. It's just a pen name. You can ask me about it or whatever. And I wanted to just come up really quickly and say, I've been out for years now, and I've been coming to this for years now as well. And what's really nice, and one of the biggest reasons why I'm here, is just to be able to see so many people that I've known over the years who are here and how fun all of you are. So if this is your first year here, there's a lot of really fun, really cool people. And it's nice to be able to get to know everybody. Kind of along with the documentary, one of the biggest reasons why I left the church was because of my brother, who is totally gay. And, you know, he came out, I was still a believer, and, you know, maybe this was just a phase for him to, you know, be a sinner and destroy our forever family. But, you know, we were always really, really good friends, and we were always really close growing up. And as time went on and we had, you know, more conversations, and it became very clear that, you know, that's who he was, and that's how he was going to be happy, then it became very obvious that the church was very, very wrong about that issue. And, you know, if they were wrong about that issue and they'd been wrong about a lot of other things, then what were they going to be right about? And, you know, when you compound all of the history and stuff like that, then it, you know, everything just kind of falls apart. So, you know, that was a big deal for me and me being able to leave or whatever. And then just kind of lastly, the longer you're out, the better everything just is. You know, I didn't even watch conference last weekend. Like, I didn't care. It didn't, whatever, they could say whatever stupid thing they wanted to. It didn't bother me because they're just dumb. And that's amazing. So, you know, if you're fresh out, you know, it can be pretty raw at times, but, you know, there are people who have been there and people that can help guide you through, and a lot of fun people here. So thank you.
My name is Janice Robertson, Gemini on RFM. I've been coming to these over the years since about 1997, and I've never stood up. But I faced my mortality about a year ago. Well, I had a stroke 3 years ago, but a year ago my neurologist told me, you better make some drastic changes. So there's a few things that I feel like I need to do. This documentary will be very close to my heart. I was married for 22 years to someone who I met in high school, got engaged in college, waited for him while he went on his mission. 2 months before we were to get married, he had to go on a mission, which threw me a little bit, but, you know, this was the 60s, and I did it. And brilliant scientist, was a bishop, everything. Tenured BYU professor. 22 years into our marriage, something was not right, and it finally came bursting out that he was gay. And it was a devastating experience. We had 4 children. The youngest was 8 at the time. Of course, we separated and divorced, but we spent a year dissecting our marriage and what it all meant in the church, and then we separated, but I was still going to the bishop for counsel. And I think I became an ex-Mormon during that time because I went to him and said, I want to get a temple divorce, a temple cancellation, whatever it's called. Well, the church doesn't do that anymore. What? Why not? Well, they feel it'll all be worked out in the eternities. And I said, what? He's going to turn straight? And the bishop just looked at me, and he said, I don't know. And I said, Steve, I didn't even call him Bishop. I said, I'm not going to come back in here and talk to you about any of this, because not only do you not have any answers, you don't know the questions. And in that moment, something, you know, it took me a lot more years before I finally resigned, but something switched. They don't have any answers. They're just a bunch of businessmen. And their goal is just to open more profit centers to get more money from the gullible. And you know, it's funny, my kids are still all in, dug in deep. And my son, you know, back about 2010 or so, just on a whim, my partner and I, non-Mormon, never been a Mormon, thank goodness, we went out to Wendover and I won a jackpot of $8,000. Okay, it was a total fluke, I know. But, of course, I had to tell my kids, you know, well, my son, he just, oh, Mom, you know, he thinks I'm going to turn into a total gambler. But I was thinking about that, and I thought, you know, you give hundreds, if not thousands, of money to the church every month, because he makes a really good salary. And if I go out and gamble $200 or $300 two or three times a year, do the math. Anyway, it's wonderful to have such a community that we have. And I have to say, the best and brightest are leaving the Mormon Church. Thank God. That's all.
Being peer pressured, but also the spirit is so strong, you guys. And I don't want to be filmed because the backlash, I can't even deal. I'm a recovering bishop's daughter, so my parents got home from a mission to Nauvoo where they paid the church to let them be tour guides for a year. So this would not go over all that well. They wouldn't babysit my kids anymore. I've been out for 14 years, and I'm so appreciative to have found you guys, and I didn't know you guys existed. And I've been listening to podcasts for like 6 months, and some of them over and over. The guy who was Raptor, or did you write a book? Oh my God, I've listened to your podcast and read your books. You're so funny. Yes. Look him up. Raptor Jesus is hilarious, Kindle. But anyway, it's true that it's better outside the Mormon Church, but it's also true that you have to look at it, and you have to work at it, and you have to not run away from the issues that are involved. And I think for anyone who needs support, and I don't live anywhere near Utah, so I did, there's Al-Anon program. A lot of people don't know that children who grow up in alcoholic homes have a lot of similar issues to children who grow up in fundamentalist homes. And so you can go to actually Al-Anon support groups and find that they have a lot of really helpful information. And so I just think that it's important. It's important for everyone to stand up and say, this is demonstrably false. Like, we were in Uber on the way over here, and the Uber driver asked us where we were going. So I said an ex-Mormon conference. And he said, he was a returned missionary. He's a member of the church. He wanted to, like, why did you leave? Like, it's so perplexing to Mormons. Like, you don't get it. And I was like, well, like, I got divorced, and the bishop said all these really creepy things to me when I got divorced. And it was like, I was a young kid, so I started researching, and like, none of it's true. And he was like, so it wasn't for you. And I was like, but if it's not true, then it's for you? Like, you're just going with it. You're like, I don't know, it's not true, but it's like, super fun, and they have potlucks, so let's do it. It's like, I believed it. Like, I was in. I believed it with my whole heart, and I was devastated when I found out that it was not true. But it's definitely not true, which is, you know, means you can drink and drink coffee, so...
I know, right? Amen. All right. My name is Holly Nash, and I live in the Las Vegas area. My mother and I live in the Las Vegas area. Yay. Vegas. Okay. And so, you know, my mom and I have been coming to these things since 98, and only missed a couple of years, but we absolutely love coming here. Some people we only see once a year when we actually come here, so we really enjoy it. And I keep saying every year, I'm not going to come up because everybody hears from me every year, so why do you want me to keep coming up and saying the same thing over and over? But I always see new faces, and I know that for some of you, you're still working on your way out, and maybe my story will touch somebody, and, you know, well, okay. So anyway, I am 40 years old and have been out for 24 years. And I know you're like, man, she looks good for 40. No, okay. Anyway, so I get that from you, Mommy. Anyway, so I have been questioning since I was 12. I never really enjoyed the fact that they separate the boys and the girls when you're 12 years old, because school never did that. And I always thought that was weird. My birthday is in the middle of the school year, and so I always thought that was weird that I could be best friends with a guy and we would go and move together from grade to grade, but we wouldn't do that. Like, if I was 2 months older than him, I would get taken out of primary and be put in young women's before he was. And then we would come out of class and we would meet each other in the hallway and, oh man, I learned about this and this and this today. And of course, it's all about like how to sew and stupid shit. You know, grow your hair long because boys only like girls with long hair and stupid crap. And I was like, what'd you learn about today? And he would never, I can't tell you. It's so spiritual and it's just for men. I can't tell you. And I'm like, why are you allowed to know shit that I'm not allowed to know? What the fuck? Like, you know. So I started like, I was questioning since I was 12 and I just hated it. They forced me to babysit and I couldn't stand children. And I was like, and they were talking about us being, you know, going to, you know, get married and having a buttload of kids. And I was like, who wants to do that? Man, I want to be an orthodontist. I'm like, I have 10 years of school in front of me. I'm like, what? Anyway, so I just did not fit the mold. It was great. So I have been out for a very long time. So some of the jokes and the things that people talk about, you know, like my mom always does this thing. She, you know, you knock on the door and she's like, what is wanted? And I'm like, what the fuck is that? I don't know any of that. So, cause I like never went through the temple marriage. So there's a lot of things that I don't know about, but anyway, but I still like to laugh in the jokes and the whatnot. And I come mostly because it's super fun. So, but anyway, so I'm just, you know, hi everybody and happy to see you and yay us.
I forgot to tell everybody that the bar is still open and he's just waiting for you to come and order something. You can bring it back in here. And it's going to be open until 9:30. So if you feel like that, he's still out there.
So please don't film me. And also, please, what I share here, don't tell anyone. because it's because of you guys. So,
what?
Of you guys. So I'm talking to you for you guys. Because you remind me of my brother. So when I was 7 years old, I contemplated ways to kill myself. And I thought I was really, really evil because Satan wasn't supposed to tempt me yet. Because I wasn't eight, right? So, but I knew that was the only way I would get to heaven. And my mom had once told me when she'd been in a fight with my dad that because she came from pioneers, that she had more valiant blood than my dad, who was a convert. So anything that was ever wrong, I thought came from my dad's blood. I thought that because I looked like him and I had more of his personality, that I needed to fight this half of me that wasn't valiant. So I didn't kiss until I was 19. I accidentally swore at 19, too. I got married at 20. I had my first baby at 21. My father-in-law and mother-in-law pretty much picked me out, which is really sad for them because I didn't quite turn out how they hoped. But the thing about it was that I always discounted myself. I wanted to be a child psychologist. I love my five children. I love being a mom. But I didn't value anything that I wanted personally because I thought anything I wanted personally was selfish. Being a child psychologist is selfish. How is that? But that's what I grew up thinking. And then my parents were on a mission in England. And this is the private part. My little brother came home from his mission. He'd been in Australia. And he told me he was gay. And I took care of him. I was his mom. When he was young, he shaved his arms once. And I was like, Nate, you look gay. And he was. And he carried it inside of him his whole life. And he couldn't tell anyone. And he prayed every night that God would cure him. And he fasted every fast Sunday that it would go away. And then he went back on a mission. And Elder Worthlin laid his hands on his head and cured him of being gay and told him to never talk of it again. He was still gay. And I love my brother. And he was my first shelf breaker because I couldn't break a shelf for me because nothing I felt had value, but it did for him. And then I adopted this beautiful little Cambodian girl. And this beautiful little Cambodian girl has brown skin. How do I believe that she was cursed? And so through my life, I've had this beautiful gift of other people and other people's challenges because, you know what, I'm heterosexual and I'm kind of submissive and I did a really good job fudging. I was Young Women's President everywhere I went. I held every class presidency that there was. Everybody looked up to me. I fit everywhere. I never didn't fit until I had people who I loved that didn't fit. And so when I wasn't Karen, I was loved. And now that I'm Karen, I'm not loved. I'm not loved by the people I love most. So I'm so grateful for all of you. I'm grateful for your courage. I'm grateful for your bravery. I'm grateful for everybody sitting here and for people that raise their voices and that create home for someone else that's going through the same stuff. So God bless, or Sky Gotti bless all of you.
You can film me all you want. Thanks. I believe in fairy dust and pink. And 4.5 years ago, my husband told me he didn't believe in the church. And I cried and was devastated for a week. And I decided to save him. And 2 weeks later, I was ex-Mormon. And he went to RFM looking for help how to tell me he didn't believe. His username was Stuck in Zion. And 3 weeks later, I was there posting, and I became two Jedis. We had a joke about the dark side and what's really the dark side and what's not, you know, and the Force and all that. So it kept things light, which was great. And he changed to Sith Lord instead of Stuck in Zion. And that was 4.5 years ago. And 4 years ago now was my first time here. This is my fourth time coming. In 4 years, I have, first of all, I have five sons. I did the whole, I was fully Molly Mormon, fully believing, fully everything until that atomic bomb got dropped in my life. 4 years later, 4.5 years later, I just started my second year of graduate school. I'm getting my Master's of Arts in Counseling Psychology. I started my internship, my practicum, 3 weeks ago at a secure facility for severely mentally ill adolescents. And it's a tough population. A lot of them are LGBT. A lot of them have families that will not accept that. My heart is with those kids. And I don't know if any of the kids are there are Mormon or not, but it's tough. There's transgender, there's gender fluid, there's everything. And I'm grateful that I've had this experience and this change, and I get to be what I want to be because nobody ever asked me what I want to be when I grow up. So I get to be me. I get to be fairy dust. I get to have pink and purple hair. I get to work with kids that need people who can handle it and who can be with them and not judge them. And I'm actually reached the point now that I'm grateful I was Mormon, because I was that, and I'm not that. And that big change is phenomenal, because you feel it so much more when you've been it and then you're not. And you can be the voice, be the thing in the world that says, no, no, we're not going to let people do that and say that and hurt people and throw them away and lead them to suicide. And I'm just thrilled. I'm thrilled that I get to have an identity that I choose to have, and I can be whatever I want. And I'm glad I can show that to my kids, my 5 sons. And all but one, one's kind of sort of Mormon, and sadly, he, well, not sadly, because I like her, but he recently married. He got married and divorced, and then he married our arch nemesis's daughter. Her dad and my husband were on the State High Council together when we defected, and it was ugly. But I like her, and my son loves me, and he comes over, and it's all okay. I let him be him, and he lets me be me, and it's okay. And my other kids are all out. They believe in whatever they want to believe in. And that's great. They can be who they want. So it is better. It gets better. Take some time. And then you reach the point that you're grateful you had those experiences, because it lets you help other people. And I wouldn't be who I was had I not been where I was. And it's amazing. So.
Hello. I just wanted to come and say hi to everyone, because I feel like I might need a little sticker that says ally, because I learned a word today, and apparently I'm a never mo. And I'm here with my husband, who used to be Mormon, was raised Mormon, and comes from a family who is still very devout. And I was raised in a Catholic household and really haven't cared that much about religion my whole entire life. And now I talk about it on a pretty regular basis, even though my husband and I don't really practice anything. And I find that very, very interesting. So my husband was raised, his dad is now the bishop of his church. We're all the way from Calgary. So we came down when we learned about this. I think we just learned about it this year, because we are kind of going through some phases with my husband's family in trying our hardest to be as respectful as possible and maintaining our self-respect. And it's pretty difficult. And I just thought I'd come up and say hi to everyone, because I feel like if anyone comes and leads with an inside joke that I may not understand, I will try to learn as much as I can this weekend. And also just wanted to say that I think this is a really interesting group that definitely touches people who may not be coming from the same stories and same journeys as everyone who's here. And as someone who, you know, is kind of from the outside always looking in, I think that you guys are all in exactly the right place. And the more I learn, the more I feel that it is important for these types of groups to exist. And it's very important for people to understand that there is issues and conviction and, you know, life-altering circumstances that come along with the choices that are involved with not being a part of something that your family may not even let you understand is okay to not be a part of. And I feel like the story that my husband and I have is a little interesting because we knew each other in high school when he was part of the church and went all the way through school and went on his mission and came back and left after that. And then we came together. And it's always really funny when people ask if we were high school sweethearts. And I always say, I ran with a little bit of a faster crowd in high school. And so I'm just really very interested to learn about the experiences that people similar to my husband who've had. And I feel like there is a balance because I love everything about my husband and he wouldn't be the way he is without being raised Mormon. And that's a really important piece to hold on to as well. So I just want to say hi. And again, teach me the joke after you tell it. I promise I'll laugh and then learn. So thank you.
Okay, so I'm the other Nevermo. So, so some of you might have known me from last year. I'm Kathleen's sister-in-law, and I'm a Nevermo, but my life was more fucked than yours. No. So I really relate to you guys, and I admire your courage for coming out in whatever form that is, and my world was... just as fucked. So I grew up in a fundamentalist evangelical Christian home where gay was wrong, and I had no television, no radio, no outside contact with the world. We couldn't wear pants, wore dresses 7 days a week. We had to wear scarves on our head. And I was more fucked. You're right. So I relate to the FLDS, you know, and there was abuse was rampant. I was fast on my feet and had a smart-ass mouth, so I skirted around a lot of situations, but not around others. Corporal punishment was rampant. I mean, I just got beat on a daily basis for talking. So, I mean, and I argued with God because I'm a woman, and I'm supposed to stay home and be pregnant and have kids and shut my fucking mouth. And you know what? I hated that. And so I'm in the middle of writing my kind of coming out story, which is After Perfect, I think is the title. But because I abandoned perfectionism, because Christianity says you're born broken and you have to say these magic words in this certain way, and so that maybe someday you might live to be this thing. And yeah, I felt like an odd duck all my life, you know, so throw little Pollyanna to the wolves at 18. Yeah, that was an adventure. But, you know, so moving here to Salt Lake City 2 years ago and meeting the ex-Mormon community, I finally found my voice and been able to tell my story and not feel so weird. But I married in the church. I left the church but went to Assemblies of God movement and then, you know, married the man that God chose for me. Because, you know, God's going to pick some short, fat, ugly bald guy, you know, right? And I just have to submit because that's God's will. And was 10 years in an abusive marriage. And he nearly choked me to death in front of my kids. And I was the good Christian wife and was submissive and just endured till the end, right? Oh, forget all of that. So moving on, thank you guys for, it's not just you. it's religion as a whole. It's other fundamentalist Christianity, other fundamentalist religions. So this community is awesome to have this kind of support. I just hope that all of you can come out and speak your truth and be an example to others that need to find that courage too.
Hi, I'm Gary Horlocker, and on Facebook, I'm Horsemanshoff, that's Ernie's last name. And my friend at work, he says, "Remember, you're a Horlocker." And I said, "Don't say that. I don't want to remember I'm a Horlocker. They have such high standards." Then he says, "Remember, you're a Horsemanshoff." And I said, "Oh yeah, that's me, I'm a Horsemanshoff. They have no standards. I can do anything I want." So I kind of like this. I don't like to embarrass my family, and I have a lot of respect for how important the church is to them, and I don't want to embarrass them. I started publishing papers on gay Mormons and things that would really make them curl up, and it didn't do much for our relationship. So I'm trying to be good and not offend people, but... I think it's really important that we all have what we care about. And, you know, I was just this really good little boy, and I just loved the gospel. I loved learning. I loved going to church and Sunday school class and learning about why we're here and where we come from and where we're going. And this was just so exciting. And I had a fun ward, and they said, "You can ask whatever you want." And I just thought, oh, this is so awesome. And I just kept asking questions and kept asking questions. Went to school and more school and more school and more school. And I think now I know a lot less than I used to. And I'm kind of slow. I don't know. You know, these people, they tell me they knew that they were gay from when they were really young, and I'm just like 30 years old and can't make it work with a woman. And I'm like, what is my problem here? Why can't I find that right one? It's just, you know, I'm getting really depressed. I built a house. I want to, you know, build it, and she will come. It had 5.5 bathrooms and 2 kitchens. I was desperate, so... When she didn't come and I didn't even know how to kiss a girl, I'm like, I gotta kill myself because, you know, I don't even know how to be bad, and I don't know what to do. And so I just, like, it was really a turning point, and I got these spiritual experiences that taught me God wanted me to make some sins, and, you know, like Eve, and I needed to taste the fruit. And so I did that, and I went to Evergreen, and I went to reparative therapy. Little by little, I figured this out, so, and I didn't kill myself, so I'm still here. I think the polygamists wanted to buy my house. It was three women came together were checking it out, and it ended up being a Hispanic family that bought it. I guess I wouldn't go cheap enough for them, but... Anyway, I just I guess I just wanted to get that feeling out of my system, so I come up here and it's gone, and then it'll be gone the rest of the meeting. I can just enjoy this, but I haven't felt that for years since I was going to church. Anyway, I think I'm what I call existentialist now, and I've been studying a lot of philosophy, I'm still doing that trying to find answers thing. I really love to learn, so... what we've discovered is that we're making our lives as we go, and I'm becoming more alive as we go. And, you know, we said 20 years from now, 18 years from now, Ernie's going to be 80, where there's a little age difference between us. And after 80, you get more restricted in what you can do. So I said, well, we've got to make this last 20 years, and we got to make up for the first 30 years that I missed. So we have 3 dates a day, and we kiss each other 3 times each time. We got to kiss once, we do 3. So if you see us kissing three times, that's why it is. We're just making up because we only have 18 years left. You know, we're all, he's already 62. We're getting Social Security, and I gotta keep him alive so I can get all that money. So anyway, life is getting good, and we're gonna die. We're dying. We're all dying here, you know. So you gotta be thinking about that and make the most. And as we get closer to that death period, we're just gonna have whatever bonuses come after 80. But between now and then, we're gonna live it. So anyway, thanks for being our family here. Looking forward to this conference.
Have to warn you all something about me. I am a Sith Lord. True story. Once upon a time, I was with my family in Arizona. My brother was taking me to the airport and decided to talk to me finally about the elephant that was in the room. And he said, "You know what, Amy? I still have hope for you." Like, okay. And I'm sitting next to my daughter. My daughter's with me. She's 11. "I still have hope for you. You just need to remember that Darth Vader is the one that killed Anakin. Don't let yourself do that to yourself." Kid you not. True story. This is a grown person, okay? He's older than me. Have no idea what he's saying. And I'm pretty sure my daughter was like, "What the?" So I decided if I'm going to be a Sith Lord, I want to have an awesome name to go with it, right? So now I've decided that I'm Darth Monomo. So, we do have better, cooler stuff on the dark side, and it's a better place to be. Just saying. So, yeah, it's kind of a funny thing. I'm going to be going to Arizona next weekend to be with my family as we celebrate my grandma's 100th birthday, which is pretty amazing. I'm nervous because the last time I saw her, see, the thing is, we can laugh all we want about the craziness that comes, but there's still those heart-wrenching moments. Like last time I saw my grandma, she said, "You look different," because she found out I left the church. "I can tell you look different. I lost the spirit." I'm like, "Well, my hair's a little lighter." Trying to like down to them, like, "My kid's right here, you know." And she's like, "Well, I can just tell you look different." And she asked, "Do you take Serena to church?" It was a general question. So I said, "Well, yeah, sometimes I do Universalist church," but she just said church, right? So I say, "Well, yeah, sometimes." She's like, "Well, she's just a great person, and you need to make sure that she goes where she needs to go into the eternities." Because I'm, forget me at this point, it's just my daughter, right? So I thought that was very interesting, but I'm going to be facing them next weekend. It'll be interesting. But I wanted to kind of just share with you that, God, it can be just so tough. You got to find the humor where you can. But it's hard. It's hard. And I've been out for 4 or 5 years now. But I want to say that I am proud of the fact, this is a whole other story and I won't tell, but I'm proud of the fact that my ex-husband, who is gay, is at my home right now with our daughter helping assemble furniture for the new home that we just moved into because he loves his daughter. And we are great friends, and he wants the best for us. And what an incredible, stellar example of the human soul. I'm just blown away. It's just amazing. And I'm embarrassed about the fact that it wasn't that that made me leave the church, all, seeing all that he went through, took research. Anyhow, thanks, you guys. I look forward to hearing your stories.
This is just less than a minute, I promise. Because I already spoke, if you didn't meet me before. she held up the Dunn card. For those of you, I've only met one, who have recently come out of the church or are still working towards that process, just know that all of these stories and all of these journeys have so much meaning to every one of us, and that your journey is extremely valuable too, and it's hard right now, but we're here, and I gotta tell you, it gets so much better. And very briefly, my mom and I fought like cats and dogs every single day for years and years and years about my sexuality, about not being a member of the church. And right now she is so excited that I'm making this movie and so proud and happy of me. We're not together. She can't wait until I get married to my partner, Kai, who I've been together with 2.5 years. She still goes to church every day. She did move out of Utah because she wasn't a generational Mormon. And she was told that she wasn't as worthy as other members of the church that had grown up here. But, you know, she's still very active, and she still really questions some of the teachings because of me being in her life. And I got to tell you, if you're a gay or lesbian person, in my opinion, the best way to change a person's point of view is to shove it down their throat. And on that note, have a wonderful night and drink a lot.
Kind of boozing it up on the back row. I had a breaking free activity this week. Becky McKinnon inspired me. I call it pyrotherapy. It's burning things that drag me down. So, so it was good. This week was my leather quad, my teaching sets of scriptures, my hymnal, and it felt so good. And a second thing happened that night is a buddy came to the party, and I didn't think he was going to be there, and he's still Mormon, right? And he's trying to tell me, you know, don't do this, don't do this. And I felt this compassion in me where I'm like, Enrique, thanks for sharing. You know, I know you're trying to look out for me. I appreciate you. And that totally shut it down. Normally, I would have argued, but this time I didn't. I just said, thank you, but this is what I need to do, and just carried on. So there you go.
It feels really weird to me that I'm here right now, and then I even am getting up to speak to you. I want to start by saying that I really appreciate all the F-bombs that have been dropped so far from the podium. Yeah. that, yeah. Because that's been a word that's been really helpful. That was, well, continues to be really helpful for me transitioning out of Mormonism. I guess something I'll comment on is, well, I grew up in the church and very much believed it all, and I went to BYU and served in every calling possible. I served a mission in Georgia and in the Bible Belt, and it was there that I started questioning Mormonism, and so it was a very chaotic, confusing time. And I was just thinking right now about how, well, I'm 32 now, and it's been about, I haven't really kept, well, track, but I think it's probably been about 3 years since I accepted and admitted to myself that I really don't feel right about being in the church, and I'm just going to consider myself non-Mormon. Then it was like 2 years ago that I started telling my family and stuff. Life has not turned out the way I planned or expected. It's turned out even better. So there's been, you know, the hard things. But I was thinking right now about how when I was in the church, growing up in the church and a lot of the experiences I had that I feel like shaped me, and a lot of things that helped me be a better person, I think. I know there was a lot of synchronistic things that happened, and magical things, or just things that just felt meant to be. I don't know how to describe now as a non-Mormon. At the time, I explained, you know, I thought, okay, well, that, you know, that's the spirit, or that's God, divine intervention. So I don't really know what exactly it all is now, but I know that that sort of stuff continues to happen in my life, and synchronistic things happening, and just feeling like I'm being guided, or just I'm in tune with myself and where I belong, and people that I meet that help me or that I help, and I, one of the challenges when I told my family that I don't believe anymore was they just suddenly saw me differently, and so I took opportunities to continue to spend time with them so that they could see that even though now that they knew I didn't believe, that it didn't mean that I was different. I was still the same Jana that they knew and respected and loved and admired. And so it's been a process, and it still is a process with some of my family members and some of my friends. But I've also accepted that I don't need them to understand me, and so that's been really, yeah, just lots of things I'm always learning, and it, like I said, it's really weird to me that I'm here, but I'm excited to hang out with y'all. Yeah, so thanks. Thank you. That's it.
Hi, my name's Steve Holbrook, I've been out of the church for over 25 years, but the last 3 years I've been kind of active in the post-Mormon community. And the last 3 years, when you think about it, have been pretty phenomenal. 3 years ago in 2013, Elder Uchtdorf stood up and said, "Doubt your doubts." And a month later, the first of the essays started coming out. And the next October, Elder Ballard got up and said, "Stay in the boat." And the next year, they came out with a policy change, and lots of people got out of the boat. And this year, Ballard said, "Where will you go? What will you do?" It's a great time to be out of the church. There are so... They they just keep talking, and the more they talk, the more people are coming out. And it's actually fantastic because there's a wonderful community for people who have lived that lifestyle and then found the courage to stand up and say, I don't believe, and to have the personal integrity to stand up and walk away and try to keep relationships intact with believing members. It's a tough road to go. But anyway, I think that it's wonderful. It's a wonderful time to be out of the church. I'm glad I kind of got connected to the post-Mormon thing in the last 3 years. It's been a blast. One of the things I've been involved in is a thing called the Mormon Spectrum, mormonspectrum.org. Allison Udall's the one who really championed that. She's just wonderful. I helped her out with a thing called the MAP, a map of in-person communities. So one of the things you'll lose when you leave the church is a sense of community. You actually have a better sense of community because you actually are authentically yourself. And it's lighter, it's wonderful, you get to be yourself, and the connections that you form with other people are also authentic because they're accepting you for who you are. There's no pretense. And so community is a great thing to find with that kind of context. And so if any of you are out and are wondering, man, I kind of miss having people I see every week in the ward building or whatever, whatever you were used to, some people really miss that. Go look on mormonspectrum.org/map and find a community near you. There are over 185 communities on that map worldwide. Lots of them in Utah. Pretty much wherever you find a temple, you'll find a Mormon Spectrum in-person community. So go take a look at that. I do have some cards. If you see me and are wondering, I'll try to have cards on me so I can just hand you it. You got the URL. So anyway, I'm delighted to be here with you guys. Thanks.
I think this is about the third time that I've been here, and I enjoy coming. It's nice. I see Steve's face a lot. At the resignation event that was last November, there was over 2,000 people, it's estimated, in the plaza, and you guys were there as well. I said hello to you. The thing is, if the church were true, then it would be one thing, but a lot of us that are, born in the church and that we're had it basically forced down our throat, basically. Some of my earliest memories is being, yelled at. We're going to go to church right now, whether you like it or not. And maybe that resonates with some of you here. I don't know. The thing is that you, as a child, you believe your parents. You do. And so when I had a bad experience with a bishop at college, and I decided that if the Mormon God were that judgmental, really, I'll just have to take my chances. It was kind of like in the story in Huckleberry Finn that Huck has to decide if he's going to turn Jim in, the runaway slave, and Twain brilliantly says, well, I'm going to go to hell. I'm going to choose to go to hell versus, I'm not going to turn in the slave. And so at that point, I had been somewhat of a devout believer, and I didn't really have any spiritual witness at that, some people say they have a spiritual witness, but it's a fleeting sort of thing, I think. And it seems that it's a competition that it can become like outdo the next person. Well, my spiritual experience outdoes your spiritual experience. And so, like, I'm going to rate my spiritual experience about zero. So the thing was that I our family left Mormonism without really resigning, and we spent 30 years or so not going to church. And so I have two children, and they were both raised as atheists, and or not saying they would go to church. So that when they go to the grandmother's house, then they would go to church, and they would get the, you know, like, weren't super afraid that they were going to get too much indoctrination, like once in a while they'd go to church. But there came a point where we went to a missionary farewell where, I don't know if you've ever been to them, where they tend to, you know, it's almost like a Saturday's Warrior sort of thing. Is like that these are the very elect going out to serve a mission. And so it's like my wife said to me, she took me aside after and she said, can we not go to those anymore? And so we sort of been boycotting everything except, say, funerals. We do go to a Mormon funeral now and then. And one comes to mind. One of my dad's friends had died, and he was a good friend. I went to the funeral. And, you know, it was just the typical Mormon funeral, except for there was a variety of beliefs, I think, across the family, because it is getting out that the church is not true, you know. The internet, a real thing. So one of the sons stood up, and he said he had a lot of praise for his dad, and that, you know, he hoped that he would see him again. But he didn't have a perfect knowledge that he would be seeing him again. But he thanked his dad for the life that he'd given him, and that he was always there to take him hunting, and that he was, you know, just a great guy. And the stake president was the final speaker, as often the case in these sort of situations. The stake president, who was named Mark Ivins, stood up and he said that he did have perfect knowledge of the, so we, you know, it's like in a way that was just so, you know, you have a person that's vulnerable because they've lost a loved one, and that, you know, everyone has their own belief structure. And anyway, I think that is the message from Where Will You Go? I saw all the memes that came out after the Russell Ballard statement, and the one that I liked was from Napoleon Dynamite. Wherever I want, gosh!
Please don't film me. It feels so much like a testimony meeting, and I've got to just do this for my own self. But last time I went to church was in March, and so this is really, really new. Yeah. Thank you. I kind of feel like I have a stomachache. But, you know, I sat in the congregation most of my life feeling not worthy enough to even stand up. People, this is wrong. I'm 50 years old. I got to figure this crap out, you know?
Look
24. What?
You look 24.
Oh. Well, you're too kind. Oh. Well, that was worth standing up then. Thank you. But. And worthy. I mean, I'm just sweating, like, just, I, you know, it wasn't that long ago. I just felt like, gosh, why aren't I like these people, you know? I just don't feel that sense of, I don't know for sure, and I'm not good enough. And I, you know, my husband, he didn't join the church. He was a member, but really didn't grow up in it. So he learned about 28, 29, about the basics, and then right after that, we had had
our son, and the bishop asked if he wanted to bless him. And so they sent the missionaries over. And then, like, 4 months after, we went through the temple. So it was really pretty rapid. And I always just thought my husband was not good enough. Is that sad? He's a great man. But I'm telling you the truth. This seems so weird. I'm telling the truth over a pulpit, you know? That just never... I've never told the truth. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Anyway, I tortured the man for 22 years, though. That's what I'm saying, you know, like, and I tortured myself. And then, so damn it, I'm just pissed. I spent a lot of time not liking me, just not liking who I am. And just looking at the others that, like, they were better, they had more. Their husband's a bishop. You know, mine's the basketball coach, you know? I mean, that really exists, doesn't it? It does. It's a real thing. And I can't believe I'm at a microphone and telling the truth. This is so great. So anyway, my name's Colette Longson, by the way. I'm a total nerd, and I believe I'm an ex-Mormon.
A little old buzzing bee came in and asked me to remind you, those of you who are fairly new to drinking, sometimes we forget to tip the bartender. So please, if you've had several drinks and haven't tipped him, will you slip him something when you go out? Thanks.
Hitting me on the side. I grew up Catholic, so like this is really weird for me. But you said something about worthy, and I want to talk to all of you because what we're doing is really for everybody in this world. This morning I got this DNA result back from Ancestry.com, which comes from Utah. I don't know if it like started off as like a Mormon found it. Did it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just found this out this morning. So I always thought that I was 3/4 French and 1/4 Italian. Turns out I am Italian. I'm also Spanish. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm also gay, but hey, thanks.
But I'm English and several other things that are not French. And it's the identity of what you grow up with and what you think that makes you who you are. And more importantly, what defines you as being worthy. When I was, God, I can't even remember when I realized I was gay, but it was a long time ago. And I had a girlfriend. I even got her pregnant while I was in high school. She miscarried and things happened. But I think what was even more harrowing to me, which is probably one of the biggest reasons why I signed up for this with the documentary, was when I was 19 years old, I actually took my own life, and I died, literally died. Don't know how long I died for, still a mystery to this day, but I definitely died. And they brought me back to life, and it was a very surreal experience. I can't explain it to you what happened. It's not like what they say, but it's exactly like what they say. But the worst thing about it was that I didn't feel worthy. And I know each and every one of you, whether you're gay, straight, it doesn't even matter. There is a point in time where somebody told you because you no longer believe in this that you are not worthy. And who decides to take that worth from you? Who says you're not worth living? Like, it's so unimaginable. It's unfathomable to tell somebody that you're not worth it. You're only worth it if you are like this. This very specific thing. You have to go on your mission trip. You have to marry the bald man. You have to be this perfect something. And you, who comes along and tells you that you don't? And then when you figure that out yourself, you feel so isolated. And you're alone. You're not. I mean, look at this room. I mean, like, it's not even going to be... This is like half the amount of people that are going to be here tomorrow, as far as I've heard. And not even a quarter of the amount of people that wish they could actually be here right now. And for those that are here today, maybe for the first time or speaking for the first time, I didn't even grow up Mormon. Girl, I grew up Catholic. That shit's hard. You know? We have our own inside jokes. But they parallel. But I think the only reason why I wanted to come up here is because, yes, we are making a documentary. Awesome, that's great. But it's to voice the unvoiced and to reach out to the masses and be like, guess what? You're not alone. Recently, there was an article that really got me on board of this where the state of Utah, the actual state of Utah, said that the rise of Mormon youth suicide was because of the high altitude and low oxygen levels. And you can laugh at that, and it's fine. We laugh at absurdity. But the reality is the pressure of dogmatic theology that teaches you and ingrains in you that you're not worthy to live amongst those that tell you you can't. It's just ridiculous. So if you know of anybody that has gone through this, if you know anybody that specializes in it, hit me up. Find me. Not because of the documentary, because I don't want you to feel alone. I don't want you to ever, anybody in this room, regardless if you're gay or straight, or questioning or anything like that, you can never do what I did to myself. Because sometimes you just don't come back like I did. And it's not worth it. You are worth it. You are worth it every fucking minute that you have left here. And get that kiss. Get those two kisses. Get those three kisses. And hug and hold people. That's all I wanted to say. So thank you for showing up.
I'd rather not be filmed, probably like you. So, boy, it's good to be here. My story is probably similar to many. I'm a historian. I love history. Served a mission in Philadelphia. Masonic temples, big in Philadelphia. And so that was the first time I went and learned about masonry, and it was just fascinating. We go to the back of the hall, and they're like, oh yeah, we've got these two great brother Mormons are here with us, and if you want to hang over after, we've got an original 1830 Book of Mormon that you can look at. And I thought, why in the world do these guys have an 1830 Book of Mormon? And they said, oh yeah, we're, you know, who's who among American Masons. Is so that was kind of my first kind of step into masonry, and loved history. I was the guy that was a great apologist for years and years, and to my wife's chagrin, people would come over and look at my bookcase, and I've got a Book of Commandments, I've got an original Book of Mormon, I've got all these masonry books, I've got all kinds of stuff on the shelf, and people come over and ask me questions. I've been in bishoprics, taught Sunday school, taught gospel doctrine, and people come over and they, well, tell me about this book, and my wife would just be like, oh, don't go there. And I figured I was the guy that I could handle this. You know, I'm that strong. I can take all this. And so people would come over with questions, and I would tell them, the great apologist, I could compete with Fair and everything like that. And so in fall of 13, the church said, hey, we're going to close the church history museum, and we're going to come out with these essays. And I called my wife from work when the news broke and said, this is so exciting. Finally, we can be honest. We can be open. We can discuss this. And then November, the first essay came out, and I was devastated. It was just terrible. And the next one came out after that, and it was even worse. And so by February, I went to a temple recommend interview, and kind of got through the questions like I've always done, kind of like, you know, who's the best? Oh, it's the Cougars. Who's the best? Oh, it's the church. You know, kind of a very broad interpretation of the questions. And the very last question, are you honest in your dealings with your fellow men? I thought, I am, but you sure as hell aren't. And so that was kind of in February. I had a cruise coming up with the family, Disney cruise coming up. I didn't want to kind of toss the whole apple cart in case the wife wasn't quite on board. And I had a son turning 8 in July. I thought, let's get through that. So broke the news in August, went well for about 3 days, and then it was hell for about 3 months. Then told the family, told the parents, that was a little rough. Resigned in May, and things have actually gotten a lot better since then because I felt like I can go to a Catholic service and not feel like I've got to needle anything. But when I'm at a Mormon service or when I'm traveling on the road and somebody says, hey, are you Mormon? Yes, but not like, you know, there's all that, you know, baggage now that's with it, and so I'm glad to be done with that. So anyway, that's me, and I'm glad to be here. And since then, I reached out, and there was a couple of Mormon Spectrum people trying to get started up in our little area. And since then, I've kind of taken the lead on trying to get that moving. We've got about 135 now in the little Wasatch Back area. There's anywhere from 6 to 12 that show up weekly, and then everybody else just interacts on Facebook. So it's kind of fun. So good to be here. Good to hopefully meet a few more of you. And thanks for listening to me ramble.
Hi. So my name is Tim Harper, and I'm an ex-Mormon. I've been out for about 4 years, we all have our own journeys. And man, thank you so much for sharing your guys' experiences. I've been really moved, and boy, I feel like I've had it easy. I'll get to the end of life and there'll be some screen that says, you completed the practice mode. Would you like to try again? I just wanted to share a little bit of some thoughts I had if I've got time. I've been thinking a lot about the subject of irony, and how much it just describes my experience with this religion. Just irony all along the way. Irony. When I was a kid, I never felt worthy. Just always felt unworthy. And the reason was because I was honest with my bishop. I told him everything, and I was never worthy. I was never worthy to, you know, do anything. And it was like my whole childhood, and I look around at my friends, and they're all worthy. They're all participating in all the, you know, the passing of the sacrament and whatnot. And what was wrong with me? Well, irony. I was honest. They were doing the same things. Irony. When I left the church, you know, it was honesty that led me out. And I was to blame for the pain that was created by that. That's irony. I was researching polygamy. I was just like, how can people like be okay with this? I mean, sure, fine, I guess whatever. Like, people are into their own thing, but you know, how is that a thing? How are people really okay with polygamy? It seems like an awful thing. And my wife found the history. She's still a believing Mormon, and I love her. She's great. But anyway, she found the history, and she thought I was interested in polygamy, and she was really worried. and so that blew up in my face. Holy cow. It's funny in hindsight, but it was hard. My mom and my dad, you know, my mom hurt a lot. Like at first she blamed me and she was angry at me, and then she hurt for herself. She felt like she failed. And I just feel like here's another point. Like the church just blames everybody. They blame the people that leave. They even blame the parents. Not directly, but geez, the culture and everything that's built up sort of points that way, in my opinion. Got it. And I heard those Mormon leaked videos, and one of them said, like, well, people are leaving the church. What can we do? One of the apostles or somebody there, I don't know who it was, said, well, we can make the parents better parents. And can I go on record and just say, bullshit. Bullshit. I didn't leave the church because my parents failed. I didn't leave the church because I'm unworthy. I left the church because it's bullshit. And anyway, so I think where the irony ends is ultimately a pursuit of truth, even though that led me to fail the Temple Recommend interview, is what led me to where I am right now, and I'm happy. I'm in a great spot. I feel comfortable. I don't feel like I have to believe anything that I don't really believe. And, you know, truth isn't always pleasant. It's not easy. Sometimes it can suck, but it'll set you free. And thanks.
Hi, I'm Robert. What I want to say, I was raised Catholic, altar boy, wanted to be a priest, the whole works. And 19, I joined the Mormon Church and broke my mother's heart. And for the rest of my life, I felt like she was so disappointed and hurt in me. And then 40 years later, I discovered I didn't believe in Mormonism anymore, and now I feel like my believing children's hearts are broken, and my grandchildren's, and I see my little granddaughter look up at me when I'm sitting in the audience while the blessings and the circles are being performed, and so the other day I was in one of my, the chip was heavy on my shoulder, and I wanted to write a letter about what to believers and to say, if you're a true Christian and a Mormon and you see the pain that someone that may have told you they're gay or they don't believe in the church anymore, and you really believe that Christ taught that the first commandments, or that you should love everyone as you would want to be loved, and to not judge, and that you believe in freedom of religion and freedom of conscience, then your job should be to try to take away that pain by telling me or those that may have told you things that hurt that you're there for them anyway and you love them anyway and you'll be there and that you won't judge them. And you can't imagine the burden and the pain that will take away. But then a friend of mine said something tonight that turned my thinking around a little bit. Paula said, we were talking about her believing family members, and she said, I just want to let them know I love them, and I'll be there for them, and I won't judge them. And all of a sudden, my thinking on my letter I wanted to write to believers was turned all around, and I realized that it's so much healthier for me if I just love them and let them know I'll be there for them, and I won't judge them. And all of a sudden I thought, that turns my anger all around and turns it to love for them, and and I'll be healthier for that. And so that's all I just wanted to say, is that maybe rather than me telling them they need to follow what they believe, maybe I need to remember what I believe, and that love is most important, and to let those that I feel like I've broken their hearts, let them know that I still love them and I'll be there for them. So that's my thought for tonight.
I know. I've been out of the church for 21 years, but this is my first time doing this. I also have gone to the mission farewells, and I'm the only one out of the church in my family. but I've been supporting them and supporting baptisms, and we go to all that stuff. And recently, I know I've tried the love approach and just love them, but I'm kind of angry. And I thought I'd put all these feelings to rest after 21 years. And my niece is getting married, and nobody will go to the wedding or attend the wedding, and she's not getting support. And the same thing had happened at my wedding. And I had spoke with my mom recently, and she had said, I didn't need to celebrate your wedding because there was nothing to celebrate because you were married in the temple. And it was just incredibly hurtful. And that's why I got angry, and these feelings have just really resurfaced. And that's why I'm here, to hopefully find some friends and recenter myself. So.
Hi, I'm Joelle. I've been out of the church probably about 4 years, but it's been a process. Probably started back in about 2003. To backtrack, I grew up in a very LDS home, 7 brothers and sisters, or 7 siblings, and kind of lived the idyllic, I guess, what anybody would expect of a Mormon girl. Got married just shy of 19, had my first child when I was 20, had 5 children altogether. And about 2003, I did an innocent internet search because I didn't like going to the temple. Hated the temple. I was just like, and everybody would stand up at the pulpit and say how much they love the temple. And I was just like, what am I missing? Because I'm like, I dreaded it. And I was like, okay, it's like the end of the month. I guess I should go to be the, you know, good Mormon girl. And so did an innocent internet search. And then all of a sudden, all this stuff came up about the Masons and everything. And I was just like, holy hell, what's going on? But I was very involved in my Mormon lifestyle and everything. With my kids were all little. And so I just kind of stuck that up on the proverbial shelf and lived out my life. Fast forward several years, a huge bomb dropped in my life with my now ex-husband. And long story short, he ended up going to prison for white-collar crime. And just how our state president, everything, handled everything, kind of got me on my shell to kind of research everything again. And then it was a no-holds-barred. I was checking out every book in the library, and I was just voraciously reading all about the church. And so, I mean, in a matter of a couple of weeks, I was done with the church. And I presented all this information to him, and this is before he went to prison, but he was just like, oh, you've been deceived, and I was realized I'm all alone in this. I am all alone. I don't know what to do. But since then, I've been on my own, and I've been with my kids, and I have never been happier. I've been able to be true to myself. I've been able to pursue my dreams that were separate from being the perfect Mormon housewife. I'm in a program right now, about to get my bachelor's in radiation therapy, and have my own career and have my own success in what I want to do with my life. So I am grateful that I was Mormon, because it's taught me a lot about myself, and I wouldn't change it. And I love my family. I'm about to go to my brother's wedding next weekend, where I'm going to be the only sibling not at the temple. And but I will go and support him, because I love my family, and hold my head high. Thank you.
Pale ale. That is how I say hello. So, the spirit has led me to speak to you all. Oh, see? I have to back off. That's how well it's speaking through me. So, I'm from Florida. Are you from Florida?
I live in Miami.
Okay. Well, my wife and I, we have two beautiful children. We got married in 2012, and moved down there. And I was raised Catholic. I went to Catholic schools, Catholic educated. I had some amazing educators to this day. Fantastic educators. Taught me a lot. Had to take a ton of religion courses, obviously. But it was taught very contextually. It was taught with an open closet with all the skeletons. There was nothing hidden. And it was taught, like, I was never taught anything was literal in the Bible, ever. So when I met this Mormon church and I hear about this Jeebus coming to America, it's like, yeah, that's a good story. And in my mind, I'm going, okay, well, what were they trying to teach? Because that's how I was taught. So, you know, there was no ark. I was taught there was a story behind that. What were they teaching? There was no Moses that parted the Red Sea. What were they teaching, right? So that's how I was taught. So when I heard this, okay, what are they trying to teach? Yeah, that's cool. I can sign up for that. So I go through this journey thinking everybody else is thinking the way I'm thinking. And you're in a singles ward, and you're in a singles ward. You just, you know, you're just a squirrel trying to bust a nut. I mean, can I get an amen, right? So, right? You're not talking about whether it was spiritualized or actualized. You're just talking, what are you doing on Friday? I got 3 minute mark, right? So then I get married, and we move to this family ward, and I'm sitting in a priesthood, and they're saying this stuff, and I'm like, you don't actually believe that, do you? And I was shunned very quickly. And then when our baby was born, she's this beautiful, precious little thing, right? And I'm like, I'm not doing this to her. They actually believe this shit. I'm an OT-8 in Scientology here, and I just found out about Xenu, right? Like, the volcano. I just, like, what am I in, right? So I started reaching out, or started reading and finding stuff on the internet and reaching out to people, reaching out to the author. I don't know if Jeremy's here. I called him at home. I called John Dillon at home. I'm like, we're on an island here. You know, we're in the middle of Florida. We're on an island. There's 200,000 members of Record in the whole state. You know, third, fourth most populous state in the country. There's only 200,000 members of Record. Like, we're alone. And I went to my bishop and I said, I'm not doing this to my daughter. You know, you're not sexualizing my daughter at 2 years old. Like, it's not happening. And we were dropped like hot potatoes overnight. Just overnight. So now we're really on an island. Like, really on a lonely island. So I'm like, well, what's my favorite Lonely Island song? And it's I'm on a boat. So I'm like, well, what are we going to do, babe? So last year I put together this trip, this one-year trip, and got a bunch of people together. And I just wanted something for me and my wife to know that we weren't the crazy ones. Like that we're the normal ones. Like that we're not nut, you know, like we're not crazy. So, you know, so we had to, you know, we had to do something. So we got these 49 awesome people that we would, you know, put in our children, or we would, I don't know what you call it. I see you're messing me up. So you know, these 49 amazing, beautiful people that we would, you know, betroth our children to if we were to, you know, the two of us were to, you know, die in like a donkey accident in Tijuana or something. But, so we're doing another one. We're going to do an annual deal. We got 50 people coming now this year. But, you know, so I asked my wife, I said, what do you want me to say? What do you want me to tell everybody about our experience? And she just says, you know, we just need a place to heal and let people talk to each other about their experience too. And as far as, you know, staying in the boat, right? You know, just be hungover and happy. So I can't wait until we shut this baby down at 1 a.m. So Pele Ale.
I was not the type that gets up and bears their testimony. I don't do this kind of thing. This is our first time here. We've been on this big rabbit hole journey for the past year, and we came here at a whim. Today is actually our wedding anniversary, and that's when he's just barely fit hearing that for the first time today, too. So I feel extremely lucky because we left together. I feel the turmoil that people go through. I'm an older sibling we have 8 kids, and I'm the only one that's left like this, and it's a really dramatic change for them, and it's very, very heartbreaking for my mother. And so coming to these types of things is just me trying to figure out how I make this transition for her, because it hurts me still that she's hurting. And sorry, it's like I'm just right back at church. I feel like for the past year is the first time I've been able to have my own agency and choose for myself and really like find out who I am and be me. Thanks.
I haven't had 5 minutes with Paula. I'm filled with anger. I need to have a talk. I've got Roberts now. Paula, would you stand up? Lisa, stand up. Linda, stand up. Leslie, Karen. If there are any women in this room who feel alone or feel like they need people to talk to, there you go. Would you please find one of these women? They're a group of women who have gone through many of the things that you have gone through. Just corner them. They'll give you information. They'll take care of you. They'll see that you have what you need. You can sit down. Thank you. I wanted to, after conference and Elder Ballard's talk, I was so angry because if I can compose my thoughts so I can make some sense, I know hundreds of wonderful women who have left the Mormon Church and are still wonderful and are still whole and are still real and are still loving and are still committed and still have morals. Hundreds. Some of my dearest friends marched with purple umbrellas downtown from ordained women, and I wanted to be there, but I do not want to stand as a witness. I do not want to do that. It is behind me. But I support them, and I love them, and I love them for what they're trying to do and the changes that they're trying to make. I want to go stand as a witness, as a just a normal, everyday kind of girl, and somebody that just went through something I never thought I would ever experience. I remember when I told my daughter, I said that one of my last things were I had five grandchildren. Two of them were teenagers, and they'd always known their Nana as the Mormon grandmother. And I said to my daughter, in tears, I don't know how long I can hang on, but I will fake it till I die if I have to keep from hurting them. We all make deals like that, don't we? Your mother, you would do anything not to hurt your mother. And we all know how that feels because we've been there and we know how that happens. And my daughter, I said to her, what do I do? And she said to me, let me think about it and I will get back to you. A couple of days later, she called me back and she said, Mom, I want you to do what is right for you. I want you to be the authentic person that you are. And you will just be the grandmother that will show my daughters how to live life when it doesn't always go as we thought it would. And I thought, and it was just the most freeing, wonderful thing that I could do that. Anyway, that's just how it is. But I wish I could take that and go and stand in the streets and change that whole idea. And I don't know why we have to sometimes. I know a lot of people have to stay in the dark or stay secret or stay not can't do those things because of their family, because of things and the losses. And I know that's a personal choice. But anyway, as for me, I am really, truly just an ordinary girl doing a extraordinary thing for me, if you knew my background, and an extraordinary thing with my husband, and an extraordinary thing with my five children. And I haven't stood at a podium in 3.5 years. And this is freaking me out. I'm going to go sit down.
My name's Elisa, and I've come the last 2 years. It's just been really wonderful to be with y'all. It gets better, right? It does. It just gets so much better. It was fun to hear our friend come up talking about the one true trip because it was really just a gas, and we had a good time together. But I think so remarkable about that is the ability we all have to just make our own crowd, to make our own, you know, community. And so I think I was here a little bit late, but I think Steve probably stood up and spoke a little bit about more, the Mormon spectrum, and like how you could, you know, if you were meeting for coffee somewhere or whatever, you could put that group online so people can find you, which I think is really remarkable. And I'm thinking about last night in Provo, I was able to host the Calm meeting, which is community after leaving Mormonism. And so we have this meeting bi-monthly. Again, it takes an effort of a lot of people that always want to make it happen because they're in the business of helping people heal and helping people find new community. And so I guess I'm just standing maybe just to say I'm so grateful to all of you who are doing that kind of thing already, and some of you stood up, and encourage the rest of you, if you're not, or if you're feeling like I am all alone, then you be the one, right? You be the change. Be the one. Get on Reddit. Or get wherever, you know, and say, I'm having a meeting. And maybe you'll have a meeting of one for a few months, but you never know. If you keep just being regular, you're going to have other people who just need you, maybe as much as you need them. So I'm just kind of a vote of encouragement for you to keep plugging away and finding people who are struggling. Thanks.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. We came last year, and I was just shaking in my boots. I was terrified to be here. We were just, like, so brand new on our journey out. And I just have to, like, this room is full of so many people that I love so much and just have changed our lives. My husband and I left the church about a year and a half ago with our 8 kids, and I didn't believe anyone. Woo! 8 kids. I didn't believe anyone when they said, your kids will thrive. You'll be so happy. Like,
And we are so happy, and we are doing so good. And Karen, I love Karen's post about where will you go? Where won't we go? I mean, life is so awesome. We are having so much fun. And our kids are so happy. And I didn't catch your name when you just spoke, but sweet Rebecca, sweet Kim, a year and a half ago, held me in her arms. Cute Kim, right behind you. She will do the same thing for you in 1 minute. She held me in her arms and she said, you go to your mom and you hug your mom and you hold her by the arms and you say, Mom, I love you so much. I'm not going anywhere. I will be here no matter what. I am here. And that has changed the world with me and my mom. It was the best advice I could ever have gotten. Kim and so many, Paula and Linda and Lisa, I mean, I just could count like a million people in here have been those moms for me that have helped pull me through this really hard time. And my mom and I are, we're getting it back together. And it's been really good because I'm not going anywhere. I have a lot of life to live. So thank you. It's so fun to be here, and I hope to get to know more of you.